G'day everybody and welcome to the Down Under Centre Migrating to Australia podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by Heather Jackson and Lisa Chambers. We'll hear Heather's story as they've just been granted their visa and they're making their move to Adelaide in mid-November. So firstly, Heather and Lisa, welcome.
Hi guys.
Hi. Hi.
Heather, I'm coming in from Melbourne. Lisa's coming in from Adelaide. Where are you coming in from?
Greater Manchester.
Greater Manchester. And Greater Manchester's been home for you for a while?
Probably for the last 14 years.
Oh, excellent. And were you from Manchester originally or your partner, Gareth?
We're both from here originally, but my dad was in the army, so I moved around a lot as a child.
Ah, nice. So let's talk about who's in your family. So you've got three lovely children. So just how old's Summer?
She's 14.
And Ava?
She'll be 9 when we land.
9, nice. And Roscoe?
He's 5.
5. And so you're coming over on, I'll just explain to listeners what visa you're coming to Australia on.
We've got the 190 permanent visa.
Yeah, excellent. And Gaz was the main applicant, being an electrician?
Yep, he was.
So you're in a position where your visa's been granted. Do you remember what day your visa was granted?
Yeah, 20th of July this year.
Yeah, nice. So we're mid-September now, and do you have like an arrival date penciled in?
We'll be landing in Australia on the 16th of November.
Oh, so flights are booked and everything?
Yeah, they are.
And who'd you choose to fly with?
We're flying with Etihad for the longest haul.
Okay. And are you having stopovers or are you coming straight from sunny Manchester to sunny Adelaide?
Yeah, we're stopping in Bali for 9 days. We've got 2 stopovers on the way to Bali.
Excellent. Have you been to Bali before?
Nope, never. It's always been on my bucket list to go, though.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea, actually, to tick that one off when you're on your way to Oz. And have you been to Australia before?
No, never.
No? And Gaz, he's never been?
No, none of us have.
So not being to Australia, how do you make whose decision was it? How did you come to the idea of landing to Australia mid-November?
It was Gaz's idea originally. It's something he's wanted to do since he was qualified as an electrician. And he's kind of brushed the idea off onto me after mithering for many, many years.
So how many years are we talking? Like, do you remember when he first joined, like when he first suggested it? Were you like on board straight away or did it take a little bit of time to sink in?
So it was before we got married. So I'd say about 12 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I wasn't keen on the idea just because I was very close to my family at that time. So I kind of put it off for a little bit.
Okay. And we got Summer being 14 and I guess Ava being 9 and Roscoe being 5. So the older two, how are they going through mentally going through the idea of changing a whole country?
All the kids are just really excited about it. Summer doesn't really, she can't wait. She's probably the one that can't wait the most because she has trouble making friends here. So she just wants like a fresh start. Ava's very close to all of her friends. That's kind of holding her back a little bit. But yeah, none of them are saying they don't want to go. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, you're quite lucky because, obviously with three kids, you've got some, probability of one would probably be more inclined in staying. So that's worked out well. And when you were a bit hesitant at the start, you mentioned you were quite close to your family. Was there anything that you researched or looked at? Or was it just Gaz, just a bit of wear and tear and just sort of slowly grinding you down over the 12 years?
I think it was that. And it was the fact that as I was seeing people move over there and seeing it more and seeing how much their lives have changed going over and how much of a better lifestyle it is and having more children throughout the years, I've realised that I didn't want to bring our children up here. I'd rather them have the lifestyle that they've got in Australia.
And you said you've seen people, you witness people go through this journey. Is it family, friends? Who is it?
Gaz's family lives in Perth. I've got friends in Perth. He's got friends in Perth, actually.
Okay.
So it was seeing all them and how much they've settled and the lifestyle that they have.
So they're in Perth and you're heading to Adelaide. Was there a particular reason why you wanted Adelaide?
Yeah, it seems more of the lifestyle that we want. We don't want – Perth seems like the big city lifestyle. We will just kind of want more of a chilled, laid-back lifestyle.
And let's talk about lifestyle. So, you know, what are your targets? What are your goals? Are you looking to sort of change your lifestyles around a bit, or is it just more weather? What's the lifestyle you're looking for?
We don't really want to change our lifestyle. We're kind of moving over there for our lifestyle because it's not something that we can have over here. We like to be outdoors all the time, and obviously weather's a big issue over here. We like the kids to be outside, taking part in loads of activities and just that mainly, because there's not really a lot they can do here.
And with all three children, you know, they're all at school age. How have you gone? Have you selected any schools that you've thought about in Adelaide?
No, not really. I've been looking at the schools, and they don't really seem to be much of a difference between what each school offers. So we're trying to focus more on getting jobs and somewhere to live, and then the kids are quite adaptable. So we're not that worried about trying to pick out schools.
So you're coming mid-November, and in Australia, school starts sort of the last week, I guess, in January. So are you anxious about keeping the kids entertained, or how are you going to address that?
Hopefully we can kind of get them in for a week till they're kind of enrolled for the week, and then they'll probably just see it as a big holiday, to be honest. If one of us is working and one of us is off, it's not going to be a big deal. But the kids will probably just see it as a big holiday.
So you're thinking putting the kids in this year, and then, you know, for a week, and then they get a bit of an idea of it, and then start them again in January.
Yeah, if that's the plan, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that's a really good idea, to be honest. Heather, I think that's kind of, I've never heard that before, but that's a really good idea. I guess they sort of get to make a few friends. And what I found, being a migrant myself, and Lisa will add to it later as well, that when you start schools and you meet in Australia, the parents are really accepting of it. So I think that's a really good idea, because you might make a few friends and a few parent friends as well that, you know, you might be able to catch up with in that, you know, that our long summer break. So we've gone through who's in the family. You've decided to make the move, Gareth's idea and everything like that. So Gareth went through the skills assessment. Now, there's a huge paper-based side to the skills assessment. And for the 190 visa, you've got to gather all your years of work experience. Was that something that you helped Gaz with, the paperwork side, or did you just leave it to Gaz?
No, if we left it to him, we wouldn't have the visa. But yeah, he kind of did the physical side of it, doing the tests and the actual technical interview and things. But I helped with the paperwork. I felt a bit helpless.
So was there a conversation like you know, when you signed up with us? Was it like, all right, I'm going to do the practice? Was he like, I'm going to do the practice side, you can help gather, you know, the financials and all the documents ready? Or no, did it just naturally fall that way?
Yeah, it naturally just fell that way. That's just the way it's always been.
Awesome. And getting all the documents, what was the what was the most challenging document you reckon that was the hardest to get?
I can't remember. It was that long ago. I can't really remember what it was called.
You had the tax, you had the bank statements, statements of services.
So the HMRC one, that was the worst. A lot of people will probably say that because they just take forever to get back to you. And when there's a bit of, is it the statutory declaration, when there's a bit missing?
Yeah.
Just trying to get that all together. They were probably the hardest bits.
So how many years did we gather? Did we gather the 8 years after the qualification?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, and Gareth self-employed or employed, or was he a mixture of both?
It was a mixture of both.
Yeah. So yeah, it is challenging. And was he, you know, like when it comes to his English test, do you remember what score he got?
I think he was 2 under the 20 points.
Wow. Did he do the PTE or the IELTS?
He did the PTA. He did it twice and decided to give up. And then when we put our expression of interest in, he went for it one more time to get our points, and he got it.
Oh, good on you. That's so good. I reckon that's it's so challenging, the English test. I think lots of people maybe underestimate it. But, you know, being assessed against reading, writing, speaking, and listening, it's not, I guess, what Gaz knows. And, you know, he's an adult. You know, you sort of, like, you're not expected to teach people how to read, write, speak, and listen again, but it's teaching them how to pass the exam and what the assessors want to hear in the way that he's speaking, listening, reading, and writing. Was he really nervous about it the first time he sat it?
He thought, well, no, he wasn't, because of, like you said, you don't know what you expect. He thought, oh, it'll be easy. Like, he knows English. It's pretty easy. And then he got to it and it wasn't anything he expected it to be.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I reckon that's a good way to do it, though, sort of throw yourself in the deep. And, like, obviously there's all these learning material that the Down and Centre can provide and other people can talk about it. But it's one of those things, once you're doing it and you get a good understanding, it does make that second attempt, if that's required to, you know, like to get the score that you need. Do you remember how many points you put in?
Originally we put 65 points in, and then it went up to 75 once he'd done the English.
Yeah, that's, look, 75 points for a 190 is a really good visa. So, okay, so he's done that. He obviously came down to us and did the practical assessment, which would have been done. Was he nervous about that?
No, I don't think he was.
Yeah, he smashed it, didn't he? He did so well through it. Obviously, from Manchester to London, it's quite a journey. So did he stay the Down the night before, or did he just in and out in a day?
I think he went to a different one. I think back then there was another one that he went to. He didn't
did go to Birmingham, did he, in Crewe?
I think, yes, I think that was it. It must have been. And it was quite
driving. How far is Crewe from Manchester?
I'm no good geographically. About 3 hours, I think. 3-4 hours.
All right, yes. So you can easily do that in a day, can't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good because they don't, you know, we supply all the tools on the day. So it's pretty much just arrive and get through the, you know, through the practical assessment. Excellent. Yeah. So how are you feeling right now? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Are you worried? Are you anxious? Just I guess there's so many to start with. So how are you feeling?
At the minute, we're not nervous at all. I think it's just all our minds are that focused on trying to make sure we've got everything sorted. We've got no time to think about being nervous. Yeah. If it gets to go in the week we go, then it'll be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I bet. It's always that last week. And saying goodbyes, is that something that you guys as a family, does that play on your mind?
For me, no, not really. I just say bye and get on with it. But I think it's going to hit Gaz a bit harder than it'll hit me, and it'll hit the kids hard as well.
And who do you think the kids will miss the most?
Friends.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have they got plans? Are you planning to have like a going away bash?
Yeah, we've got our leaving party on Saturday actually.
Oh, nice. And what's it like? Is it like fancy dress, special occasion, or is it just a catch up?
We've booked a venue to just do like a big party kind of thing. I was going to do fancy dress, but I didn't want to pressure people into buying costumes. I just wanted them to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. You're going to get, you can probably wake up with a bit of a hangover on Sunday, and I'm sure you'll be packing plenty of tissues because you reckon it's going to be a bit emotional?
Yeah. It's, like I said, it me thinking it won't affect me, probably as soon as people start crying, then it'll just set us all off.
It is. Because, look, reality is, I mean, have you got a plan in your mind the next time you're looking to head back to Manchester?
Probably about 5 years.
Yeah. So, and have you disclosed that to, you know, to the loved ones, that that's when you're looking to head back?
Yeah, we've told them it won't be two-ish years before we come back. It'll be about more like 5 years because of the settling in and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, managing their expectations as well as your own is a big deal, isn't it? And I think that will be emotional. I remember my wife, she was with her mates. There was lots of photos with her crying. I think she cried the whole time. I think it was like more happy tears, but also probably nervous. It definitely takes a bit. But how exciting. You get to, you know, you get to leave. You know you've got your visa. I guess the pressure's off that way. You get to say goodbye to Tony. Do you have like an inkling of what you believe or feel that you may miss from the UK?
From what I've seen on the DEC of people and on of the Facebook pages and stuff, probably the food.
Yeah. What do you reckon you'll miss the most?
Sausage rolls, the nice curry, chocolate.
Oh, yeah. A what? Sorry? Chocolate.
The chocolate, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think curries is the one that gets most people I speak to.
Probably a roast dinner as well, proper, like Yorkshire puddings and everything.
Yeah, you got to make your own here. Steal a recipe.
Yeah, I can make my own, but we like going out for a Sunday dinner. So I think it'll probably be me adapting to making a Sunday dinner every time we want one instead of going out.
For my 7-year-old's birthday, that's what he wanted. He wanted a roast dinner put in a Yorkshire pudding. That's what he wanted.
That's what
he remembered.
Yeah.
So good. Actually, now I'm craving a roast dinner, actually. You've actually made me think here. When we went back this year for summer, it was a few, like, I had to get the curry, and we ended up at a pub near the place where the curry was. We got there on a Sunday, and I called in the order, and they actually turned around, and she asked the question, and the response was, they've just closed the kitchen. I was absolutely gutted. 2 years without having my favourite curry, and I could hear them say, no, we've closed the kitchen. Couldn't believe it.
Oh, no. Gutted.
So, we still got a decent curry. It wasn't the end of the world, but, yeah, I was, really, really thinking about this curry. And when you get to Oz, what are you looking most forward to? So if you could say the first thing that you want to do, what would that be?
Just being outdoors, or like not all the time, but more than we could. The kids say, oh, I want to go out and play in the garden. Yeah, it's fine. You don't have to check the weather.
Are your kids doing sport back in the UK?
Not really, no. Summer used to do rounders and tag rugby, but she stopped just because it kept getting cancelled because of the weather. And yeah, the pitch was always waterlogged, but the other two just kind of do more indoor activities.
Okay. And so when we're there, because I reckon sports would be an interesting one. Like, lots of people do team sports, probably outside of Australia, but inside Australia, lots of people do solo sports, really get into the water sports. You got a feeling that, you know, some...
I think Ava will. She's a water baby now. She just, anytime there's a chance to even go in the water, she's there. So she's most excited about doing that.
Well, you should have heard the podcast that we did the other day, when Lisa was telling everyone about the helicopters chasing the sharks away in South Australia there. So you might have to keep an eye out for that. Are you nervous about any animals or nature? Are you someone who's spooked by spiders and nature and animals?
No. My degree's all about nature and animal behaviour and the environment. So I'm not really that nervous about it, but I know the kids are. They hate anything, especially Ava. They hate anything that flies around the head, like bugs and stuff. So that'll be
So your degree, what was the degree in?
Natural sciences.
Okay, wow. Is that something that you'd be like, you know, you're interested in exploring a bit of the wildlife and scenery in Oz?
Yeah, definitely. I did my dissertation on shark behaviour around the coast of Australia, so it's definitely something that I want to do.
And obviously that would have been quite confronting. By my memory, I surf for a long, long time. And South Australia, like cactus and all that sort of stuff, did you do any research on Cactus Beach and all that?
No. I never came across that one.
Yeah, it's a really good surf spot, but they've got plaques where people have been taken by sharks. But it's a really dangerous sort of place, you know, like you're jumping off the rocks and all that when you're going for a surf. But anyway, South Australia is sharky. So, like, is that something that you're going to try get into? Like, what are your plans when you arrive for work?
I'm going to try. Obviously, I'm going to try and get in the entry level just to get in the door first. But my aim is to do something marine based.
That's awesome. I love that. I really do, Heather. That's so cool. And was that something that you've been thinking about, like, closer to the time of arriving, or has this been in the back of your mind for, you know, for a longer period of time?
Since I started my degree, really, I started doing it saying to do health sciences, and then I changed it just because I got that much into marine science and the environment. I've just changed to do that. So yeah.
Applying for positions outside of Australia in that role, have you been looking for jobs?
There's quite a few graduate jobs, not so much the marine science because you need a lot of experience before you can get there, but from a degree there, the jobs I've been applying for from here in Australia.
Oh, wow. So, and is there certain areas that offer those jobs that where you're, I know you've used Lisa to help find a house and everything, but was that part of the decision when you were looking for that house around those areas?
Not really, no, because we were more Gazzy's jobs kind of, we need somewhere mainly for him because that's his main job and I'll just go wherever. But we know that mainly the ports, like all the main ports, that's more marine based. So I'd probably have to do some traveling for my job.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing Lisa talk on another podcast where she is, you know, how close she is to the city, and, you know, seen her Facebook post where she's walking the kids to school and she accidentally strolls past the beach every day, living her best life, that one. Yeah. But, I don't think travel's, I guess it's probably a little bit different from Manchester to sort of get to the, where is the closest sea to Manchester?
Blackpool.
Is there sharks in Blackpool?
You'll probably find some basking sharks, but that's about it.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated about this actually, because have you got a, like, are you going to be on the search for sharks, or you just sort of like when you're out there, you, like, do you have an idea where, what time of the year and everything they're going to be at certain places? Have you looked into that?
Yeah, it was part of my degree was actually obviously to track the time of year, like, that sharks would obviously be there, and it was more about shark attacks on humans and to check which time of year they're the more likely to be there, to avoid them kind of times of year and things like that.
Heather, most people get worried about the sharks and the spiders, not really come out here to search for them.
Yeah.
You sort of, something doesn't align there, but good on you. They're amazing creatures. And, it's very rarely there's shark attacks when you consider how many people are in the water in all different states and states and everything. And with technology and drones and all that these days, they can sort of stop them, and we probably get more alerted. And you'd know more about this than I would actually, but, you know, sharks are probably more curious than them actually trying to attack us, if that makes sense.
That's it, exactly. They're very, very misunderstood creatures. They're more likely to attack because you're being mistaken for food more than anything else.
Yeah. They might be thinking you might be a bit of a Yorkshire pudding, running around, swimming in the water there. There we go.
Yeah.
A bit of English taste. But they don't they're a massive animal, and there's all these different sort of sharks. We've probably all seen Jaws, and you can see what those monsters do, the big great whites. A lady from Manchester looking to migrate to Australia and to study. Like, was there many people studying sharks and everything in Manchester when you're doing your course?
I think I was the only one that did a dissertation on sharks anyway.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so let's park the sharks, and I hope you have a friendly encounter with one. they're good. Is there any other wildlife that you're really looking to see as well, or the kids are looking to see?
Koalas. They love koalas.
Yeah. Do you know about drop bears? too clever for that one. Gotta be careful of those drop bears, listeners. You have to Google that one. All right, and so you're gonna miss things, and you're excited about the wildlife and everything like that. Gaz, you spoke about his job. Has he got a job lined up yet, or is he still looking for work?
He's been applying for jobs, and a lot of people have said, give us a ring when you're in the country and we can see what we can do for you. But he's not that worried about not being able to find something.
Yeah. Has he spoken to Lee about, we've got a few positions. We've always got jobs for Sparkies. I know one of our a larger electrical company is always looking for him. So you might have to have a chat with Lee from our employment division as well. Just see if we can get you something. Because does that, you know, financially, I guess, and I don't want to be too personal here, but I think it's good for people to hear. Did you have a budget of an amount or an amount of money that you thought you'd need to come over with?
Like all together to actually get there?
Yeah, like when you arrive, not like probably not so much the cost that you've incurred, but like, do you have like, you know, did you, because some people say, all right, I want to have £20,000 and convert that. Some might do it with 10,000. Yeah. They arrive with jobs. And I mean, everyone's different. Some people have family to stay with straight away and they've got jobs lined up. Do you have a figure in your mind that you feel is a safe amount of money for a family of five?
We've got about 20, well, we've aimed for around $25,000, obviously. It's easy to say that from this side, so we're prepared for it to go up if we need it to. But that's our estimate.
Okay, and did you guys sell a property? Did you were you renting in Manchester?
So we did have a property, and we sold it during COVID. We obviously didn't expect to not be without a house for 2 years. So we sold that in COVID, and then we've been renting temporarily for the past 2.5 years.
Okay. So let's go back a little bit. When did you start the journey with us?
2019.
Wow. Okay. And just for the listeners, we're like the mid-September 2023 when this has been recorded. Okay. So, yeah, so you were really hit by the pandemic as well. You're another one who's been hit and delayed a fair bit.
Yep.
And I guess no one saw that bad boy rocking up, did they?
We didn't, no. We sold our house when we was ready to put our expression of interest in, because the housing market was quite slow. So we didn't want to be left having to sell a house. And then we put it on the market and got an offer, and then COVID hit. So it was kind of, do we go with the offer or do we pull it off the market? But we didn't know that we'd still be waiting 2 years later to actually put an expression of interest in.
That's nuts, isn't it? How would you, like, that would have been so stressful. It's not, you know, for the kids and yourselves. How did you go about it? How did you manage everyone's nerves?
It was just kind of trying to find a house for us to rent, knowing in our minds that we wouldn't be staying, was hard, because people want you to rent for 12 months. And we weren't in a position at that time. We didn't think we'd need a house for 12 months. So it was very stressful trying to get us in from our house that we had with all that room into a rental that we could just put up with for a few months.
Did you know the house that you sold and everything, was the idea to bring furniture and that over, or were you looking to start fresh?
We sold the house with all the furniture in it because we wanted to.
Oh, that would have been all right.
So we would have been all right, but we ended up having to pay more money for furniture to bring to this rental house as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah. See, it swings and roundabouts, that one, isn't it? Because you sort of, I know a few people had to put their, you know, they set their, again, back then, listeners, we had it so right. Like if you spoke to Jenny Baker from our team, she would know. And you know what it was like, Heather, on the DUC club. People would say they, you know, lodged on the 5th of December and put their grant and share all their information with the group. Yeah. And then if you lodged on the 6th, you'd pretty much get your, you know, your grant the next day. That's what it was like.
Yeah.
So many people sent all their belongings and did, you know, timed it all right. And then the pandemic hit. Before we know it, it's, you know, it's chaos. So, yeah, it definitely swings and roundabouts, because you got to furnish the, furnish everything like that. And how are the kids during that stage?
I don't think they really noticed how stressful it is. Kids aren't really aware of things like that, but they were settled with their bedrooms, and they knew that they couldn't have the same bedrooms that they had into the rental house. So I think they were a bit gutted that they had to part with most of their toys and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So when the visa got granted, how did that happen? Did you get an email? Did you get a phone call? Do you remember where you were at the time? Was it Gaz who was contacted? Was it you?
It was Gaz, and I didn't know that he told Jenny not to tell me.
Ah, really?
So I think that morning I was kind of getting a bit stressed out just because of how long it was taking us. And I was just having a little moan, as a lot of people who've waited so long would know. And you probably know from the DUC posts and stuff. I was just really frustrated. And I think all that tension had built up and I was just moaning. And unbeknownst to me, he'd actually received a call off Jenny that morning to say that we had our visas, but he didn't tell me. when he got home, he still didn't tell me, but it was when the kids were settled, we had this bottle of champagne in the fridge, like a little mini bottle, which we'd actually put in the DUC stubby holder and hold it in the fridge. And that was our visa grant celebration drink. So we actually brought that in with the glasses, and that's when it hit me that we'd actually got our visas.
So was that always the plan? So obviously it was in the DUC stubby holder, but did you see it and then just feel like, wow, or did it sort of take a little bit to sink in?
Yeah, it took a little bit for it to sink in, because obviously waiting that long for your visa, it's kind of in the back of your mind that it's going to happen any day now. So it took me a while. Wow. Yeah, but when it sank in, I felt a bit silly for all the complaining I'd done that day.
No, don't be silly. No, look, this is the thing. Like, you're migrating to another part of the world that you've never been to, Norsgaz, with three children, you know, like a teenager, you know, throw in a teenager as well. Like, it's a lot. It's a big risk. And I guess people want it so bad. Did you feel it was, the really wanting to live in Australia? Or just getting through that visa stage, was it what was it more the relief of at that point?
It was the relief of, we've got our visa, we can actually get to Australia, because we actually got, I think there was about 6 months of us going, they're going to decline our visa, we're not going to get it. It was just a relief that we'd actually got the visas at that point.
It's so annoying, because, you know, like, I know we can't change it and we just live how we live, and that, you know, and that's life. But how good would it be knowing that it was coming and then just getting that exciting bit rather than just being so, I guess it exhausts you, doesn't it, when you're waiting for a visa for so long?
Yeah, it does. And then you put your visa and you get your case officer to contact, and then you're like, oh, it's not going to be long now. And then something else comes up, and then you're waiting again, and it's really exhausting.
And medicals and police checks, you were fine with all of, obviously you were fine with all of them. You got your visa, but how was going to the medical? Do you remember how that went?
Yeah, I was actually quite nervous about that, because it's just the unknown, and going with three children as well. But we went to the Manchester one, and the doctor there, he was lovely. He was great with the kids. He made the kids feel comfortable. And we were in and out within about 45 minutes. So it wasn't, it was easy.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I'm so grateful you're able to sort of share these experiences with all of us as well. So, Lisa, we've got you in the background. Any questions you want to sort of throw down, throw at Heather?
We've obviously had a relocation call. We've talked about that. That was a few months ago. And then now, we're just in the start of the home search service, aren't we?
Yeah.
So what kind of led you to choose to use a home search service to help you to find a rental?
I think it's just being with the DUC for so long and using the services already. It just seemed right to continue that with everything else that is on offer. Because it's more migrants that are doing it, so it's not someone from Australia.
Yeah, cool.
I think it's trusted too, isn't it? That's the thing. You like you said, you've used this from start to finish, and you know what you're going to expect, Heather. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah.
So obviously, being like a previous migrant, I've been through what you're about to go through, actually, is move to a new country, except for you don't now have to find somewhere to live in the process of having your three kids with you as well. Yeah. So what we're going to do is we obviously work together. The idea is that I get to learn about what Heather and her family needs and where they want to live and their budget and all those kinds of things. And then start to view those houses maybe like a month or so before you arrive, and share the photos and the videos and apply for you and just be here on the right time zone to chat to the real estate agents and be that sort of between person between you both as well. And it's really nice, because when you're in the process of helping people, it's just so nice just having conversations with them, because they're back in England. and they're like amazed. They see these like photos and videos, and most of the time they've never seen inside an Australian house before. Mm-hmm. They've never seen what the gardens are like. They've never seen the kind of sea view, and it just brings it all to life for them. So you've actually got all that to come, Heather, and it will get you super excited in your last month before you move over.
Yes.
So just one last question for me, sort of, where do you see yourself in like maybe like a year's time? What's your dream house? What's your dream location? And what's your dream life?
I don't really know a dream location, like as in suburbs kind of area, but it's somewhere that we can just sit and have a sea view. Just to wake up and see the sea every day would be amazing. A dream house would be... I'm absolutely love the two-story houses with the balcony and the living space on the top, so you can see the sea from your kitchen. That kind of, yeah, that's it really. Something simple.
Yeah, perfect. And it's a really great place to live, to be able to have that, because it is a coastal place to live. And so it's just this great mix of like, you do have the city, but you do have all those suburbs that spread out down the coast and have that really easygoing lifestyle. It'll be really cool for you and your kids as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So thanks so much for sharing your story, Heather.
You're welcome.
I hope you know, Heather, I really hope you get that sense of fulfillment, that journey that you've been through, all that waiting that you've done.
Yeah.
And I really hope that you actually... probably never say this to many clients looking to move to Australia, but I really hope you get to spend that time with those sharks and all that studying you did and all that. Do you have a favourite shark, Heather, that you know, like that you really want to catch up with?
Yeah, tiger shark.
Yeah, they're pretty cool, aren't they?
Yeah.
Tiger sharks can get, well, you know, I keep saying, do you know? You know this, but tiger sharks can get pretty big.
Yeah, I know.
So you don't want to get too don't get too friendly with it. But how close do you feel you want to get with them?
I'm not sure yet. In a dream world, I'd like to be able to snorkel with them and just actually see them.
Yeah, maybe not tiger sharks. You could, but there's heaps of great nurse colonies.
If you understand their behaviour, you could probably get that close to them.
What if you come across a naughty tiger shark? One that was a bit of a rule breaker or a tricker, you know, like to try and catch you up. But there's heaps of grey nurse colonies and all that, and they're like, you can always swim and snorkel with them. They're good.
Yeah, that's something the kids want to do.
Heather, you are moving to the right place to get up and close to great white sharks for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, South Australia's dubbed that sort of bit. WA's got a little bit of history.
Yeah.
I guess sharks are everywhere, but as you know, Heather, they're seasonal, and they'll tend to be around certain food sources and water temperatures as well. Yeah. Awesome, Heather, you have been awesome. Thanks for giving everyone a bit of an insight in your journey, and I wish you all the best. And I'll tell you what, if you're cool with it, we might catch up maybe early next year and just see how you go.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Heather. Cheers for tuning into our podcast. And we'll catch you next time, guys. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.